Life is short. It is too short to stay stuck in fear.
Hi, I'm Ebony, and I believe that stories change lives, and everyone has a story worth telling. Sometimes, unfortunately, we let our self-doubt get in the way of us writing our stories and sharing our stories. So that's why I created Motivation to Write as a source of motivation and inspiration to help writers like you and me share our stories with the world. So I talk to the experts ranging from entrepreneurs to marketers to authors to therapists to psychologists who share their knowledge and their advice to help writers like you and me step into our full potential. Becca Ribbing is a decision coach and the author of The Clarity Journal, a book that helps you get clear and take action toward a fulfilling life. She helps people discover their strengths, develop healthy habits, organize their ideas, and stop procrastinating. In The Clarity Journal, she uses prompts to help people face their fears and embrace a mindful approach to life. Becca believes, quote, "Life is short. Do what you love as soon as possible." Becca Ribbing, I am happy to have you here. You are a career coach, and you're going to talk about your book and just helping people. Helping people, that's what you do, is help people. So can you give us a little bit of your history as to how you arrived at this coaching space in your life?
Yeah, so I've been a coach for quite a long time. I started coaching when I was 25. So I ended up in it in a very organic way, I would say. Yeah. I was at my own crossroads. You know, we hit our mid-20s and we've gone to college. We haven't, but we've ended up in a career path that we thought we wanted, or we had a hard time getting on a career path that we thought we wanted. And then all of a sudden, like, what are we actually doing with our lives? We don't really, you know. And so I hit that space where I was going back and forth and trying to figure out what it was I really wanted from my life, because I did end up with a job that was on paper perfect for me, and it was definitely not what I wanted. And so I was doing the going back and forth and doing all of the reading, figuring out my Myers-Briggs type, doing all of that inner work. And as I was going through and doing all that inner work, I realized that I was helping all my friends do it too. So they were in the same place, you know, similar ages, and I was helping them get new jobs and helping them find their path. And it was really rewarding. And so as that progressed, I decided that what I really should do is be a coach.
Yeah, I like how that kind of unfolded for you.
I like it too. It's really, and I still like it. It's so funny because every time someone gets a job that they like, it's like, it's just so satisfying. I think we all grow up with those adults in our lives who are constantly complaining about their jobs. And I think I took it a little too much to heart, because it drives me nuts when people don't like their jobs.
Yeah.
You know, you spend 40 to 60 hours a week doing this thing, you should like it.
Yeah. So what, okay, because I've worked with people, and maybe I'm talking about myself too, but I'm pretty happy in my job. I'm a teacher.
Right.
Oh. But I've been teaching for years and years. But I've talked with people who are not happy, right, in their job, and they're complaining or whatever. But that seems to be their disposition. You know, so I always think, well, wherever you go, you take yourself. So how do you discern whether or not it's this job really isn't a great fit for you, or it's something internally that you need to work on?
Well, and I think that it's not necessarily easy to discern that. I personally believe that if someone moves to another job that they thought was going to be perfect, a lot of times that ends up being a wake-up call.
Yeah.
So if it really is just personality, sometimes the wake-up call can be, oh, wait, wherever you go, there you are. Like, I'm still unhappy.
Yeah.
Or I try not to personalize it quite so much, because usually if someone's facing that situation, they have some structural problem going on. They have anxiety, they have depression, and what they really need is professional help for that. But you know, I mean, teaching is a really good example.
Yeah.
You could really love working with the kids and yet still hate teaching, because there's so many time constraints. Yeah. You don't get to do your own thing. You don't get to follow your own curriculum. Mm-hmm. So I try to look for warning signs, but I try not to judge too quickly because mm-hmm. I think most people have the capacity to be happy in a job, mm-hmm. even if they do end up having a realization that, hey, but they also are struggling with depression and they need to seek out help. We all yeah. have the capacity to like what we do.
Right.
And we all should, right? All I mean, right. I think that probably most of the listeners on here, whether they are professional writers or are just doing
aspiring.
It as aspiring writers, exactly. You're writing because that's what you love, mm-hmm. you know? And so it's kind of an interesting audience because everything I would assume that the people are trying to do that are listening to you, they're trying to get to a place of love.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And so can you kind of take us a little bit through the process? Like, how do you help someone find a career that they like?
You know, so when I start talking to people, it goes in a very... the word. It's a very definitive, like, I can tell you the beginning, the middle, and the end. Oh. The beginning is I get this long email all about how they have no idea what they want to do with their lives. Oh. And, or their struggle, like the struggle email. And it's very heartfelt usually and very poignant because there's something really wrong. And then I get on the phone with them, and I'm going to call this the middle, even though it's the beginning, really. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I start talking to them, almost everybody is trying to figure out three things. They have decisions to make. They have ideas. They can't even really let themselves truly recognize that they have the ideas that they need to go forward. They just haven't decided between them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, at a real level, I could probably help call myself a decision coach. Like mm-hmm. I help people go through that. I help people see their own strengths and mm-hmm. walk through what the pros and cons are and also get more comfortable with the fact that no answer is going to be 100% right. Mm-hmm. I think we're looking for that 100% right answer and that all of the other answers are like failing answers. They're like maybe 20% answers or 40% answers. And that's not really how life works. You know, it's like we've got a bunch of job ideas that are really 80%. There's like a 20% that you're not going to like about it. There's 80% you're going to like about it. And you're really trying to decide which ones are the best fit for you.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So I like how you said, see their own strengths because yeah, a lot of people kind of don't even realize their own strengths, right?
Well, because I mean, our strengths come easy to us.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
okay.
So it's easy to be like, that's easy. Oh. When sure, it's easy.
It's easy for you.
And that's why it's your strength.
Oh, that is so, yeah, I didn't even think about that. And a lot of times we realize our strengths through other people telling us.
Right?
Like you're really good at this or yeah.
Or just from like hearing over and over again, oh, hey, so have you thought about this? Like you just did that really well. Like having someone point out what you've done well is really like it helps solidify it in your brain. Like, oh, right. She's pointed that out 5 times. It must be true.
Right. Yeah. 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 So do you run across people that, because I'm sure this is applicable to a lot of people. Like you're in this career that you're not, or this job or career that you're not really liking, and you know what your strengths are, but you're kind of scared to move on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably 80% of it. It's kind of, I mean, you may not be able to embrace fully your strengths, but you really have this like sense of what you want. It's just the getting from where you are to where you want to be. That's a really scary process because it's all new.
Right.
It's all, I call it starting friction. Mm-hmm. I can't remember whether I've read that term somewhere or I came up with it in my head. But mm-hmm. if you think about it, like when you first start, you're kind of stuck at standstill and you don't really have all of the systems in place. You don't have all of your habits in place. Like a beginning aspiring writer, right? Mm-hmm. You actually have to write to be a writer.
Right.
And how many aspiring writers do we know that don't write?
Right. Yeah.
And that's just starting friction. That is, you haven't gotten into the habit. You haven't built up your comfort level with it. Mm-hmm. And so then we think that maybe there's something wrong with this goal because it's not coming easy to us, when it was never going to come easy to us at the beginning, because we need to get started. We need to learn how to feel comfortable with it.
So you said something like really interesting that caught my ear, was getting into the habit, like habit. And I remember, I don't know where I heard this, but if you want to be a particular, like a doctor or a lawyer or teacher, whatever, then start acting like a teacher or lawyer or doctor. In other words, start to actually get into that mindset and do the things that they would do. I mean, don't go operating on people, obviously, but just, you know, become more organized, start reading up on medical issues or medical books or whatever, looking into law, just start acting. And that kind of helps to build the habits. And then I think once you build the habits, it just, things come naturally. Like you will start to, you will start to, what is the word there? That energy, you'll put out the energy of that, and then you'll see more opportunity. You'll just automatically start looking and noticing opportunities.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and also, if you're just getting started writing, listening to this podcast is great. Listening to other podcasts, writers like to write. There are a billion books about how to become a writer, and some of them are actually quite good.
Yeah.
And so the more that you can get into it. I'm in a group that's really cool. It's called the Writer's Hour. Mm. And it is 8 a.m. London time, Pacific time, New Zealand time. Oh, and East Coast time. I guess that's not in order. Everyone gets together and writes for an hour. Mm-hmm. And it's on Zoom. And it's really cool. But they also run a lot of workshops that are just authors talking about their craft and like maybe an interesting marketing thing they did or how they came up with a story in the first place.
Yeah.
And I find those stories so inspirational because everybody has their own way. You have to make it your own thing. Mm-hmm. But yet the more you hear about other people's stories, the more you can kind of sift through, hey, that works for me. That does not.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's why I started this podcast, is just to talk to different people and so that they can share their stories on what motivates them to write. What are they writing about? What are they working on? What's some things that work for them? Because when you start to hang around those people, whether it's physically or virtually or just listening to them, that starts to change your mindset.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and sometimes I joke, I am a writer because I'm trying to put myself out of business. You know, the Clarity Journal is really all about helping someone through this process that I've helped so many people with. And I've realized that you don't always need a coach. Sometimes you definitely need a coach. Mm-hmm. Sometimes if you're fairly clear about your strengths, sometimes you just need the outside prompts to help you get your head screwed on. Like you need the outside shift. Like every time someone asks you a question, it kind of takes you out of your own head and into a slightly different space where you can be creative,
right?
And look at a problem from a different way. So that's what I'm really trying to do. But it's actually kind of a funny duality. Like I am a writer, I am a coach. My writing for the coaching, is aimed at helping people pivot without needing me.
Yes. Yeah. I know it is kind of ironic, right? I mean, you're a coach, you want to help people, but at the same time, your writing is really aimed to help people help themselves. I think is what you're saying.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you mentioned like your Clarity Journal and outside prompts. Can you give us an example of like one prompt that might help someone find clarity?
Sure. So we all have our little baby that we love. This is my baby that I love.
Yeah.
My favorite prompt in the book is, who do you envy and what does that say about you? And I feel like, especially women, we're trying so hard to ignore our envy, to push it aside. But really, when you write down all of the people that you envy, you start to see patterns. You don't envy every writer. Maybe you envy Stephen King. Maybe you envy... like Brené Brown, but you probably don't envy both of them. You know what I mean? Like there is a reason why the people that rise to the level in your psyche of actually taking time to wish you were them.
Right.
There's something about it. There's something about their lifestyle. There's something there that really resonates with your own soul. And if you can take all of those, all the people that you've spent any time being like, that'd be really nice. I wish I had that. You can start to create like a really interesting life for yourself because you can start learning their lessons, going and reading about them. And, why do they do that the way they do that? And how do they, what's their process? How do they do it? And then really start to create what looks like it would work for you.
Huh. That's really interesting. I never even thought of that. Who are the people that you envy? So I'm thinking that like if you envy someone, there's some type of like usually some character trait that you really wish you had that they have, like they're courageous or they're confident or they're really good with their money or what. And that's what you want, is that confidence. Oops, something getting tangled up in my hair. You want that confidence. You want that skill set. And so if you can acknowledge that and be honest about that, then you can purposefully start to develop that within yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's actually a very good tip. Yeah. So how, because a big issue with people finding clarity even or pursuing a career goal or job is procrastination.
Right.
So how do you help people with procrastination? What is that about? What is procrastination about?
That is so funny. So I'm actually in the halfway through writing my next book, which is called Mindful Procrastination.
It's
the first time I've talked about it being recorded.
Wow.
It's still like my little like quiet baby so I'm a big believer that procrastination comes from fear. Mm-hmm. And the more mindful we can become about that, the more that it's easy to work with the procrastination instead of fighting it. Because I think we've been trained in our society to just fight it. Like you're doing something wrong. Bad's not quite the right word, but we kind of almost place ourselves in our teens or our childhood, like this is bad, this isn't what we should be doing. And yet we try to use willpower to push our way through it, and willpower does not work. Mm-hmm. If you spend a lot of time beating yourself up about something, you're not going to do it.
Mm.
And so I think that the first step for beating procrastination is really to sit down and journal about what it is that you are afraid of and really start facing those fears head on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think also a big piece is the mindful habit building, because there's this great book. It's called Good Habit, Bad Habit. And it really kind of blew my mind. It's fairly recent. I think it's within the last 2 years. And it is all about how American society is basically obsessed with willpower. And we ignore that if we make it easy for ourselves, then we don't need to use willpower at all. It just comes naturally. And so she talks a lot about how to build that. She talks a lot about how, like, if you want to work out, it's actually not bad at the beginning to just pick one exercise that you like, and then set a time in your head. Like, if you haven't done it by 7 p.m., you're going to go do it. Like, or place it in a particular period of the day. But she often talks about how the people who work out and do something different every day often get burnt out because they've created something where they have to actually think about it. They have to use like mental energy to decide what they're going to do. It's not just that idea of like rolling out of bed and doing it without any thought. And so I would say that writing is very similar. Mm-hmm. You know, set a time for yourself. Like if you have not written by 3 p.m., you are going to sit down and write 250 words, regardless of if they're good. Mm-hmm. And as soon as, or you're going to write for 10 minutes, regardless of if it's good. Because a lot of times once you, it's that starting friction again. Like once you actually sit down and do it, it's a lot easier. But if you don't have a deadline for yourself, or you don't have the structures in place in your life to help remind you,
yeah,
it can be really easy to start feeling the fear and get so wrapped up in it that, oh, this season of the show I loved on Netflix just dropped. I've got to watch all 8 episodes. Right.
Oh my goodness. I'm kind of laughing because I was interviewing a former police officer a few days ago who's a writer now, but he was telling me about The Wire, this HBO sitcom from like the early 2000s I've heard about and I never watched. And since I'm on summer break, I started watching it. And I feel guilty because I'm sitting there like binging on this show when I could be doing something else. But it's so good. It like sucks me in. But I like, because you just said a lot of good things. And the first thing I want to kind of talk a little bit more about is that facing your fear and using journaling to really explore that and challenge the fear. Because I was actually talking with someone recently about this, is that we feel the fear, but we don't really take the time to feel it. You know, we use something else to hide it. Some of us a little bit more, some things more destructive than others, like drinking or whatever. But we always want to bury it, distract ourselves from it. And so we never really challenge it. And we just keep doing that and never really getting to the root of the problem. Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and I think also we are so used to American movies and American TV shows. You have an hour or 2 hour long show. It focuses on the problem for 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah.
And then they find a wonderful resolution, you know?
Yeah.
And so we are so used to that resolution being when we see it in other people being so quick and, oh, that should be easy for me because it looks easy for them. Or I read this really cool Wired article about someone who's super successful. Yeah. They'll have the obligatory one paragraph of a struggle the person went through, but it's one paragraph. It seems like it should be easy to get through when in our own real lives, in real time, it is not.
Right.
And I liken it to childbirth. You know, when you see childbirth in a movie, it looks like 90 seconds of not fun. And then you have a cute baby and everyone's cooing and the mom's like fully made up still and isn't dripping with sweat, you know, and the baby's all nice and clean. But we're writers,
right.
You know, these books are our babies, or whatever you're writing. The poetry is your baby. Mm-hmm. And that birthing process, like what you see other people going through, it's just as messy. You're just only seeing the 90-second glamour shot of labor.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I was laughing because it's especially in older movies, like older films, and like from the 50s and 60s, like the mother is always in perfect makeup right after she's given birth. And she's like, what? I mean, she goes to bed like that, like in perfect makeup and hair.
She goes to bed like that. I think what helped me break through worrying about writing and worrying about whether a book was going to be successful or whatnot is listening to Elizabeth Gilbert, who is great on podcasts. I love listening to her. And she was talking about how, or maybe this was actually in her book, Big Magic, now that I think about it. But I was listening to it on audiobooks, so I was listening to her voice. She talked a lot about how, you know, she writes this first book And it was kind, she'd been a fairly successful writer in that she was writing for big name magazines and such. But she wrote this first book and it really didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And so then she writes Eat, Pray, Love. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden her first book is actually selling, you know, because people look up and like, oh, I loved Eat, Pray, Love. Let's see what else she's done. Right. You know what I mean? Like you don't know what's going to work and what's going to hit. And I think that we get so wrapped up in our writing about, is this the thing?
Yeah.
Is this what I want to write about? Or is this a good story? Or is this going to be successful? I think a lot of people get wrapped up in that. There are certain people that I've certainly met that have had this story in their mind since they were three, and they are, by golly, going to write it.
Right. Yeah. And so, I mean, that kind of reminds me, Becca, of your intention. I think knowing and being honest about your intention is very important, because if your intention is to become another Elizabeth Gilbert or Stephen King, like in other words, to become really popular and make lots of money.
Right.
I mean, that's okay, but you should be honest about it and just realize it's going to take a lot to get there. I think a lot of us aren't completely honest about the intention. And so we might, like, deep down inside, we want that. We want that type of popularity, but we're not really saying that or acknowledging that. And so we do this all to, you know, get to that particular end, and it's not working out, and we get frustrated, right?
Right. It's like, wait, my first book that I ever published.
Yeah.
I sold 12. Yeah. What's going on? You know, right. And it's like, okay, well, I guess I wasn't meant to be an author. I find that also with podcast hosts. Mm. Someone was telling me the other day that the average podcast has 7 shows before the person quits.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't have anything to back that up. But it sounds about right. I will run into people who are like, I'm going to have this amazing podcast and everyone's going to listen to it. And wait, I haven't gotten any listenership in 7 episodes. I'm going to quit.
Right.
And, you know, it's that being able to be persistent, and part of being able to be persistent is being able to recognize that everyone has these struggles and everyone has these fears, and you have to make the fear as least scary as possible.
Right. And I think another, what I've realized is I needed to change, this is with writing or with anything that I wanted extracurricular that I'm doing outside my job, is I try to have the intention to always be to serve in some way.
Right.
And so if I can be of service, then I'm not getting so discouraged by the numbers, because I realize, well, these are the people that need to, the people that are listening or reading, these are the people that need that.
Right.
And I will eventually you'll find your people. Right. But if I just went all in and was like, well, I just want this for the popularity, make lots of money, then I'd probably only do 3 episodes and quit.
Well, because you're not going to do 3 episodes and be Elizabeth Gilbert.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's impossible. And right. Elizabeth Gilbert was not Elizabeth Gilbert until she'd been writing for 7 years.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's the consistency, I think, is what you were getting at when you mentioned being persistent.
I don't know whether it was actually 7 years, but it was a long time. I mean, she wrote a full-on book before she wrote Eat, Pray, Love. Mm-hmm. And she had been writing even before that. So,
I mean, you never know. That's the thing. Like that, the Eat, Pray, Love, that was a phenomenon. I mean, that just happened to come at that was like the perfect book for the perfect time, it seemed. Yep. And I think she talks about, because I've seen a few of her her public talks, that the pressure from that book when she went to write her next book.
Yeah.
That would, you know, that's pretty tough, but she just had to, I think she came to terms with the fact that Eat, Pray, Love was like something very special, and that not everything she wrote needed to be that, right? And I think that's a really good lesson to be learned, is that every project that you do will find its own path, and that success for one project might be different from the success of another project. And it doesn't mean that one was better than the other. It just has a lot to do with the time in which it was birthed.
Really good takeaway is there is fear everywhere. about everything.
Yeah.
And you really do actually just have to manage your own anxiety and fear about something, because I mean, if Elizabeth Gilbert is worried about writing her next book when I'm sure she had a very, very nice contract for it.
Right.
Yeah, no, I mean, if she's scared, like, really, are you not going to be scared? Like, yeah. is there such a thing as being a writer and not having fear?
So the fear, that's really, I know we start talking about that first, the fear. How, I mean, are there exercises that you have people do to help them? I mean, you mentioned the journaling. Is there anything else that you do, some inquiries, whatever, to help them get through their fear?
Well, I like journaling a lot. Mm-hmm. If you can be honest with yourself.
Yeah.
And that's a big if. So yeah. I think that if I was going to tell someone to do something on their own where they didn't have to pay me, it would be go journal. Or if you even just start noticing when you're fearful, when you start getting wrapped up in fear, go take a walk instead of starting binging a set of TV episodes.
Right.
Because when you go take a walk, you're building endorphins and it helps you naturally get through your fear. Mm. You know what I mean? And so if you can go do something physical and then come back and do it, you might actually have a better time than if you go and use the procrastination in a way that doesn't have a natural breaking point. You're not going to go walk for 10 hours, right?
Right, yeah.
There's going to be an end to that walk.
Right, yeah.
But I mean, I think that this is where coaching really does play a big role, is that a coach can really spot when you are playing small because your fears are getting in the way. And a lot of times we are so avoiding the fear in the first place that it really takes that outside perspective. A lot of coaches have their own coaches because, you know, we're all human. We all have that fear and we're all fighting against it or trying to embrace it. But it's going to be there. It's what you do with it. It's not if you get rid of it. It's really about what you learn how to do with your fear.
Right. Yeah. And then you mentioned the book, Good Habit, Bad Habit. I thought you were going to mention Atomic Habits. Have you read that book?
I have. And I like that one too. Good Habit, Bad Habit is better.
Okay. I haven't read that one yet. But what I like about Atomic Habits, because I know that you also talk about changing patterns in people that that holding them back. And it sounds like this is what Good Habit, Bad Habit also speaks to, is doing something, like starting small. Because I know Atomic Habits, what is his name? I can't think of the author's name. It'll come to me. But mentions do something for, start with 2 minutes per day.
Right.
So if it's writing, then do that for 2 minutes a day. And then slowly that will begin to build. And then you might move up to 4 minutes or 5 minutes or whatever. But just doing it for 2 minutes a day puts you in the mindset of, I am a writer. Like, this is something that I do, you know. And that way you get into the habit of it.
Right.
And it's very similar to your do something by 3 o'clock every day or whatever it is. But I feel like that's a huge, I see this with students all the time too, is that a lot of times their unsuccess as a student, like they're not passing the class or whatever, has a lot to do with the habits. Like, what are you doing when you get home? Well, first thing is play video games or whatever. Like, you just got to
change the habit.
Replace the habit, I think is what.
Or you need to have a natural stopping point for the habit. I think part of the problem is a lot of our procrastination techniques in modern life actually have no natural end. And the thing we're doing is designed to be addictive. And so, especially video games.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to stop because it is literally creating chemicals in your brain that make you want to continue.
Yeah.
And so that's why I do a lot of time, do some, not a lot of time-based things, but do some time-based things, because it's like you need that natural breaking point to stop, to start breaking the habit in the first place or to start building a new habit. There's a book, I think they might talk about this in Atomic Habits too, but there's a book called Habit Stacking. Hmm. And the idea is you take one habit and you build onto it by putting that habit with something. So say your habit is to always sit down after you get home from school and play video games. Mm-hmm. I think that in a lot of ways, the video games really help you decompress.
Right.
And so I wouldn't say that it's a bad thing to go do that, but then tie your homework to dinner. Like, mm-hmm. as soon as I eat dinner, then I'm going to start homework, mm-hmm. you know, where you have it tied to a actual place in time in your day. Mm-hmm. And so that way after dinner, you're not going to, or I will play until I need a snack. And then once I need a snack, that's when I'm going to stop and do my homework. And then after I finish my homework, I will come back and do. And I really like that because I think the thing I read Atomic Habits a while back. Mm-hmm. I had a coach who once said that all productivity books are written by reformed procrastinators. Mm. I am not a reformed procrastinator. I am very much in the I am still a procrastinator part of that Venn diagram. Yeah. And I may be a Venn diagram of one, because maybe all the people who write procrastination books are truly reformed procrastinators. But I think that it's really important to recognize, and I think this is what I loved about Good Habit, Bad Habit, is we just try too hard to use willpower, and we feel like we should, and willpower is so depleting. And so that book is just entirely about how using willpower depletes you, and how habits, both good and bad, form, and how we can look at how bad habits form and change them to good habits. Mm. And so I really like that because it's just a much more joyful and calm way of looking at it. And I think most of us need that. Most mm-hmm. of us that do run into procrastination, there is an emotional reason under it. And so to mm-hmm. just say, go write for 2 minutes. Well, if you, it might work. It mm-hmm. really might work. And if it builds the habit, you probably didn't have a massive amount of fear to begin with.
Right.
If you're having a hard time with it, if you're having, if you read 5 productivity books and you still aren't being productive, then it's because there's something underlying. And a lot of people ignore that is just, it's hard to get through. It's hard to force ourselves. We don't have a saber-toothed tiger chasing us to go to the computer and go write.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I was thinking maybe the fear behind a lot of procrastination might be that you don't think you're good enough.
Yeah.
To do whatever it is that you want to do.
Or that it's going to be a waste of time. Mm-hmm. I think I don't think that that's necessarily for every category of career paths, but I think for writers, you know, if you look at Elizabeth Gilbert and you know that it took her like however many years to become Elizabeth Gilbert, or if you look at Brené Brown, or if you look at Stephen King, like if you look at the timeline and you're really not sure whether it's gonna be worth it because you don't know whether you're gonna get there and you don't know whether you're gonna be successful, and so why bother writing a book in the first place? Or I don't think the story is good, so I've written half of it, I'm gonna stop this story and write the next story. I think a lot of writers probably fall into that, where they've probably got a couple books half finished. Mm-hmm. And you loved it for a reason.
Right. Yeah. You know, what's interesting is I was, this was maybe, I think last year, this time last year on Twitter, someone posted a poll and it asked, like, what's the biggest frustration you have as a writer? And I went through that, like looking at the responses. And a lot of people were like, the biggest reason was that they felt like, why am I even doing this? Like, I'm not, no one's going to read this. this is a waste of my time. And then the second, I don't know if it was the second biggest one, but another big one I remember is I don't have the time. Like, mm-hmm. I can't even find a minute a day to write. And so I wonder how, for the people that were just like, I don't have the time, is that ever really the truth, or is it that we don't want to make the time?
I mean, it's certainly true if you have a 6-month-old and are working 60 hours a week. Like, I mean, there are people, I mean, writing's kind of a special case because you could write for 10 minutes, right? And you could actually get, I mean, if you're just writing for 10 minutes, you could get a lot written.
Yeah.
But I hate to shame, because I feel like we as a society shame women for not being able to do all the things. Yeah. And sorry, men, I'm sure you also have men, but I think women specifically have this like oppressive societal pressure to be superwoman. Mm-hmm. And so, no, I don't think someone who has a baby and has had no sleep in the last 6 months, mm-hmm. and has a job, I don't think that them saying they don't have the time, I don't think that's a cop out. Mm-hmm. So I think it's possible, but I also think certainly someone who's single and only works 40 hours a week, you know, sure, you could write, like, you're choosing not to. And I think that's part of where becoming really honest with yourself, because it's also being really honest with yourself in both ways, right? Being really honest with yourself that if you have a baby at home and you're trying to write and you're feeling stressed because you're not writing and being down on yourself for it, that certainly happens. I see new moms or moms with toddlers or moms with, like, you know, I mean, I think that parenting is hard pretty much till they're 18.
Yeah.
Depending on the kid.
Yeah. Even past that, right?
I have a 6-year-old and a 12-year-old, and it's not... Mm-hmm. I mean, in lots of ways, it's gotten easier, but it's not easy. Mm-hmm. So I think that being really mindful and loving with ourselves in either scenario, like, it's an excuse. You still need to be mindful and loving with yourself. It's the situation you're finding yourself in with your family/work life. I think you'll find more space to write if you can be loving with yourself and really acknowledge in either scenario like what's really going on.
Mm-hmm. And what role do values play in this? Because I feel like if you really know what your values are, then, so here's a question I'll pose to you. The way that we act and the things that we do, is that a demonstration of what we really value? Or, like, can we have these values? Say, I have 5 values, but I don't really do anything that demonstrates that those are really my values, but I believe those are my values. Because, like, what I'm thinking is that if you say you want to do something, like, I want to be, I want better health or whatever. Maybe health isn't one of your 5, and it's not good or bad, it just is what it is, right? But maybe health isn't one of your 5 values. And so,
yeah.
Or isn't even a value at all. I don't know. But how important is that? How do values play into this?
I think that's a really interesting question. You kind of got me sitting here really thinking about that, because I think values play into it. I think values play into it because most of us have some internal need to maximize something. Uh-huh. And so our values shape what that something is. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, you know, we are kind of driven to create the what we want from our lives in the first place based off of our values. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, yeah, we really do. I think that being in touch with what your values are really can help you sift through the extraneous, what should I do next? Mm-hmm. Like, should I be doing this or should I be doing this? Mm-hmm. But I don't know how much I'm a little stumped, actually. I'm sitting here like, values do really play a role in, like, as I said, like, my writing is really aimed at putting myself out of business, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and that's a value to me because I love being a coach, but I am highly cognizant that coaching is expensive and can't, like, not everyone can do it, not just because of the money, but sometimes because of the time.
Right.
And so I really want the things that I have learned to be out in the world so someone can access it for $12.95 instead right. of paying me for 5 hours. Mm-hmm. And so I think you're right. Like, it really does, the values really do play into where you're going in the first place. Mm,
yeah. I found that
a lot of, oh, sorry, go ahead.
With my, I'm just thinking of myself and, like, especially when I was younger, like in my 20s, a lot of things, or even like my 30s, early 30s, things, not a lot of things, but I found myself saying that I wanted particular things or achieve particular things that I just felt it was the right thing to want. That like right. So, and it wasn't necessarily what I really wanted or valued.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, you really need to kind of be aware of, is it truly a strong value within you, or is it a societal value or a family value that has been placed upon you that you actually don't care about?
Right, and then you get frustrated that you're not achieving that thing.
Yeah. And that's going to lead to a lot of procrastination because you're trying to perform to society, that's exhausting.
Yes.
Quite frankly, we all do that way too much already.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Becca, this has been great. I can't believe, because I go for about 40 minutes and we're at like around 50 minutes. This is so interesting. I love this discussion. But maybe do you have, well, first of all, tell us where we can find you.
You can find me at BeccaRibbing.com. That's my website. And then I'm at Becca Ribbing at Twitter and Instagram.
Right. And do you have
books on Amazon?
And on Amazon, right.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you have any closing words of advice or wisdom for the writer who is procrastinating or scared to kind of take the next step into their writing aspirations?
I would say that life is short. It is too short to stay stuck in fear. So if what you're really butting up against is fear, find a way through it. Find a mentor, listen to more podcasts, read some books on habits, but find a way to help yourself through that fear.
You know what? You just said something, or I just thought of something while you were talking. And that is, okay. So I used to do this a lot too. I wanted to achieve something. So I would do all this studying and like reading up on this, watching this documentary, blah, 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 and never really ever take action.
Oh, interesting.
Yes. Yeah,
and you do need to take action.
And I remember hearing someone say that clarity follows action. And I remember thinking, really? But I, for myself, I found it to be true. If I just take action, even though I'm scared, like, for example, starting this podcast, like, it was like, I don't even know what the heck I'm doing or how to do it, but I just did it.
Right.
And kind of learn on the way. But then when I started to do it, that's when the clarity came for me.
Right.
And I think that's huge.
I think so.
Just taking action.
Yeah. And I think that's part of the starting friction is that if you haven't gotten started, it's going to be scary because the starting of it is difficult.
Yeah. 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 This was great. Thank you, Becca. Such wonderful advice from Becca, right? If there's a fear, find a way to get through the fear. And there are lots of different resources that she went through. There are books, there are podcasts, there are people, there are, you know, mentors, television shows. I mean, there's tons of informational, educational shows, all these streaming services. So just documentaries, find a way to help yourself. And
If you need help from Becca, please check out her website to check out her resources, her services, and her book, The Clarity Journal. I love how she uses writing here as a tool for healing and finding clarity, because we all have experienced, if you haven't, then keep living, but eventually you'll just experience this time and space in your life where you feel that there's something else out there that you can achieve, that you want to achieve. And sometimes it's fear or procrastination, or you're just not completely clear on exactly what that thing is that you need to achieve or want to achieve. So definitely give her website a visit. Also visit zazo.com to sign up for my newsletter. And you can follow me on social media, Twitter at Ebony Haywood, Facebook and Instagram at Motivation to Write. Thank you so much for joining me this week. And I look forward to seeing you next week when I talk to another fabulous person. Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.